Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Greg Hahn, President and Chief Investment Officer for Winthrop Capital Management. And with me in the studio this morning, Amy Anderson. Amy, good morning.
Good morning.
Production coordinator. And Adam Koons, back from a long week in Las Vegas.
Really drug out.
Right? I think he's back.
I think so.
It was a slow return. So good morning, everybody. We're approaching the halfway point to the year. What a year it's been. We could say that about last year. If you thought the S&P 500 would be up midpoint this year, what, 14%?
Yeah.
Would you have believed it?
No.
I wouldn't have. And in many regards, that is the year. That's the year to see, 14% returns back in the day. That was kind of a good year, taking away all the fiscal and monetary stimulus. So we are at a kind of an inflection point. The economy is recovering the way that we expected. The labor market is starting to reassemble. We're seeing some real positive news in the labor market. So the base case for what we're going through is playing out, and we are at a point now where we talked about the intersection of the vaccine and the spread of the coronavirus. We're at another intersection, and it's really the intersection of the recovery and the withdrawal of stimulus and what that means. But there's a carrot and a stick here, because the administration is trying to push a fiscal stimulus package for infrastructure. That's gonna put more fuel on the fire.
Sure.
At the same time, I think the Fed has said, hey, we're gonna leave the foot on the gas pedal for another year. But then when you look at the dot plot, you look at what's going on underneath the hood, there's really a case being built to see a sooner withdrawal, other than the headline sentence coming out of the Fed. Is there's a, I think, building momentum to start to withdraw the monetary stimulus. But beneath all of that, and this is what the Fed's saying, is we're not prepared to withdraw the stimulus until we see a recovery in the labor market. But I think the April employment, the Labor Department report in April showed 9.3 million job openings. There's more job openings than unemployed people. So it's coming. We think it's going to come fast. And that was kind of what we expected to play out in the second half of the year, as entertainment, sports, restaurants, the service sector, travel, leisure starts to open up, is this demand for this labor pool is going to be really hot. And so we're starting to see that. It happened a little sooner than we thought, but we've got a lot of good things happening in the economy. The GDP, first quarter GDP growth was 6.4%, right? So it's really playing out the way that we expected to. And I think the real key driver here is going to be, what's the Fed going to do? And Powell came out last week and said, no changes. We'll look at 2023 to start the withdrawal. I'm kind of like, I can't even figure out what I'm doing next week. I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do in 2023. So we'll talk a little bit about what that means for how to manage a portfolio on rising interest rates during this podcast. But before we do that, let's talk about some earnings. Adam?
Yeah, so we're kind of approaching the end of this season. And last week we got some retail earnings, the biggest of which was Nike, one that we were watching, a stock we have across our portfolios. Revenue was up 96% year over year. So we're at $12.34 billion in revenue, with earnings at $1.32 billion. So we saw margins increase a whopping 850 basis points. So a really good quarter for Nike. And really one of the biggest things we were watching for is how their sales in China were going to do. And candidly, a lot of us thought that was going to be weak, mm-hmm. and turned out to be up 17%. So that kind of silenced a lot of the negative sentiment around Nike. So shares were up 15% after that release. So just a really good quarter.
Yeah.
And you saw a lot of just retail in general this last week did pretty well.
So one of the things we've talked about is historically apparel, these apparel companies do well during seasons and where we have Olympics. This has been a weird Olympics because we're talking about the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, and here it is, July of 2021. It's a makeup Olympics. It's been there's controversy around it. But if you're watching, I don't know if you watch track and field, but that I love the Olympics. So watching the qualifying for putting a team together, I love this time of year. I love the Tour de France. Did you watch the Tour de France?
I did not.
Okay, if you can watch anything on YouTube, watch the highlights of the first stage of the Tour de France. There were two massive, massive crashes in the peloton. Yeah, it was just brutal. But the second stage went off without a hitch. So it's, it was an amazing race to watch. So, and then there's always Wimbledon too.
Watch that for sure.
So this is my favorite time of year, especially layering in the Olympics. All of that is going to be good for Nike.
Absolutely.
That's my thesis is plus you got the playoffs going on. So I think it's got the wind to its sails here a little bit. Now, I could be wrong, but I know part of our discussion has been there's been more niche players in the apparel market.
Sure.
So, but anyway.
Yeah, Nike's positioned really well. And then if you just look at markets overall, you'll just see that a little bit of that reflation trade is backing off and tech is coming back. So the NASDAQ on a three-month basis is up 10.5% versus small cap is only up 5%. So you are starting to see technology move back in the lead. And obviously small cap has had a great year. It's up almost 20% year to date. So to see it kind of slow down is normal.
And so before we talk about rising interest rates in our portfolio models, as we headed into the end of the quarter here, covering the first half of the year, we made some changes in international.
Yep.
Our international exposure. So the way that we look at this is when you search the world over, is the U.S. the best place to invest? And for the last 20 years, the answer has always been yes.
Yep.
So our thesis, however, is shifting because we look at what China is doing and its form of authoritarian capitalism, how that competes with the U.S., what they've been able to do in the last three decades. It's been nothing short of amazing. So we look at, how do we structure investing, knowing that we don't trust those numbers coming out of China. But with that being said, it's been amazing growth. So we added another sleeve to the emerging market exposure.
We did, yeah. We added the A-Shares China ETF, so which gives us a more broad exposure. Currently, our China exposure was specifically in the technology sector, and now this just gives us a broad-based exposure to China and their A-Share. So, like I said, took that from just our overall international and added to the China.
Yeah, and then the outlook for Europe has shifted from negative to probably more neutral, but with the opening up of tourism in the summer season here, it's not going to be ramped up necessarily, but I think it's a net positive that Europe can actually, big part of, especially Southern Europe, a big part of their economy is based on tourism. So what does that mean for interest rates? So how do you, and then with that, how do you manage a portfolio in rising interest rates? So why don't you, Adam, we're on two sides of this coin.
We are. Yeah, we've kind of had a different opinion for a little while here. And so at first it was inflation was kind of the focal point. We've seen inflation numbers come out and really the bond market shrugged those off. And since March 31st, the 10-year U.S. Treasury is down over 20 basis points. It's now at 152, hit a high of 174 back at the end of March. But now we're shifting that dialogue towards, what is the Fed doing? And our bond markets discounting that. And really what you've seen is, like you said, after the Fed's meeting and the fact that they're going to keep going with monetary policy until 2023, now you saw the rates go down again. So really the bond market is saying the Fed's stuck in this position for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. And so in investing, it's never that you're right or you're wrong. You're just early.
Sure.
So it's not that you're wrong. You actually were right. I'm just early.
There you go.
So the fundamental approach would be that the, if you look at the Phillips curve, that whenever the economy gets stronger and inflation picks up, that interest rates fundamentally would adjust so that a real rate of return for the investors, a rational investor's capital, would approximate something close to zero or a positive rate of return. So that, and that's what we've seen all through the 80s and the 90s and the early part of 2000s. But since the financial crisis with the government intervention in the market, we could see negative real rates of returns. So I maintain that the rate of inflation does not matter to interest rates. What matters is the Fed's position on rates and whether they're going to allow rates to move higher. And that takes two there's two levers to pull there. The first the Fed will pull is the quantitative easing program. So they'll start to slow down their bond purchase, which I think is running $120 billion a month.
That's right.
Their balance sheet now is $8 trillion.
Yep.
So back in the financial crisis, it grew to $4 trillion. And this is, this is, by the way, you're growing from a couple, like $100 billion. This was nothing.
The sharp line up.
Right? So this is a new monetary regime where the Fed uses its balance sheets to control the level of interest rates. So cutting back on open market bond purchase is step one. And then step two is pushing the targeted Fed's fund rate higher.
Right.
But the problem is one of the ways that the Fed uses to adjust interest rate is excess reserves on the balance sheet. So where there's so much money in the system now that bank deposits are skyrocketing, but loan growth in the financial system is really, it's growing, but not at the rate of deposit growth.
So no, there's actually a real problem right now.
Right. So there's a mismatch between this excess reserve. So I think the Fed has to start to take out their sponge and start to soak up this excess liquidity if they want to really see rates move higher. How long they let this go in the system with money sloshing around this is going to be really interesting to see. But I think they risk a policy mistake by leaving this money in the system too long.
Yeah.
And we can call it an asset bubble. We're seeing an asset bubble in just in residential real estate.
Yeah, everything.
The drive up in real estate has just been amazing. So, all right. So shift. What does that mean for portfolio positioning? How do you manage a portfolio, especially when you're focused on publicly traded securities to protect it in a rising rate environment where we see potential shifts for interest rates higher?
Yeah, I mean the easy one if you think inflation is coming are TIPS, inflation protected bonds, which adjust with that level of break even inflation. But really, kind of my preference is to go with a shorter duration asset, which is has a much less interest rate volatility or floating rate securities. And many times with floating rate, what you get is a floor. So if rates continue to go down, you don't really participate in that. But if they go up, you adjust on a quarterly basis. And most floating rate securities have candidly hit their floor at these levels. So it's a good place to be right now.
Yep. And then from a credit standpoint, we could look at collateralized loan obligations.
Yes.
So there are mutual funds that invest like CLOs. They invest in bank loans. Eaton Vance has a product. But that begs the question about credit risk.
Yeah.
We have not seen really the level of bankruptcies other than what we saw in the retail sector last year, which was totally expected.
Yep.
But the credit cycle. So what do you see for an extended credit cycle here over the next 2 years as we start to normalize the economy?
I mean, spreads are obviously tight, but if volatility remains low, and I can't see a reason for things to dislocate anytime soon, you're just going to see spreads grind tighter. And even if they don't, you're going to outperform by being in credit over being in a risk-free asset.
Yep. And on the global side, we have not been buyers in the global fixed income space. And it's a cliff when you look at the size of these economies and what really is standing behind some of these bond issuances. So in the fixed income, that's one of the areas where we're trying to play it safe, is that from a risk reward standpoint, we'd rather take the risk on the equity side, not the bond side. Well, with that, anything else that you have on your plate?
Nothing here.
All right. So the first stage of the Tour de France, that's a must watch on YouTube.
Got it.
And we got the summer reading list coming out this week.
Okay.
And then we'll have the economic outlook also. So you guys have a great week. Thank you for listening, and we will be back. We'll talk to you through the week.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making an investment. decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.